Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network On Tour. I'm Katie Mosman-Wadler, and I have with me my lovely co-host, Hannah Forden.
Hey, Katie. It's a beautiful day in Denver, isn't it?
It is. It is. And we have not been thunderstormed on today. No violent weather events, and we are very happy to be here. This is the conclusion of our programming of a very full weekend that we have been broadcasting live interviews from Larimer Square, from the Slow Food Nations Festival for our third year in a row. I want to say a quick thank you before we begin to our sponsors, to Slow Food, to Big Green Egg, to Hearst Ranch, and the Julia Child Foundation for Gastronomy and the Culinary Arts for making our coverage possible. And our very, very special guest this afternoon is Pierre Chiam. Welcome, Pierre.
Thank you.
Pierre is a chef. This is a long list of titles. I'm going to read them. A chef, a restaurateur, a social entrepreneur, a culinary ambassador. All of these things rolled into one. And you have an amazing food product that we're going to talk more about that you're promoting. But thank you so much for sitting down with us. And tell me first, before we get into your background and all the projects that you're working on, how's your Slow Food Nations weekend been going?
Oh, it's been amazing. I mean, it's my first time at Slow Food Nation. I've been to the Slow Food Torino last year, but Denver is the first time, and I'm having a great time. I love the people. I love the vibe. I love the mountains. You know, sometimes I love the weather.
Sometimes.
Yeah. And all the good food, right?
And the great food and just the people, the energy, everyone with the same vision of how our food should be and should be prepared and produced.
Yeah. So there have been seemingly hundreds of events going on simultaneously from Thursday night until today, Sunday. What have you been getting up to during this weekend?
Well, I've done a few events. Once I did a workshop. The last one was today. I presented a film called Burkinabe Bounty. It's about farmers in Burkina Faso, a small country in the Sahel region of Africa, like Senegal, the country I'm from. And I've introduced this film and talked about the farmers, how they are taking a stand against big agri, and they literally just marching to kick Monsanto out of their country and preserve their own seeds and traditions. So this was a film that I introduced, and at the same time introduced this ancient grain that's also popular in that country and that I've been championing, called Fonio. And Fonio, I'm packaging it through my company called Yolele Foods. I've been doing it for a couple of years now. We're working with farmers in the cooperatives and smallholder farmers in West Africa, in the Sahel region. And we're opening markets for them. Why we're doing it is because Fonio is a grain that's very, very important in not only culturally important in the region, but for the environment as well. It's a drought-resistant grain that matures in 2 months. And
Oh, wow.
Yes, it's absolutely phenomenal, and it's nutritious, and again, it's great for the environment. So I thought that was a grain that was worth talking about. And that was the first workshop that I did today. Yesterday, I did another one that was open to the public. I did a cooking demo where I presented the same grain, Fonio, but I did a salmon, Fonio, and cassava croquette that I served with a tamarind glaze.
Mmm, that sounds delicious. Mm-hmm. And now that you're kind of wrapping up most of the programming for the weekend, have you found that personally there have been like any kind of significant takeaways from seeing the whole festival come together and kind of all the people and programs that have been here?
Well, the most important takeaway I got from this is just seeing the energy and seeing that everybody is so concerned and so determined to fight this battle and win it, the battle changing the way we eat. Mm-hmm. And taking the planet into consideration, and our own health as well, and the dignity of the farmers. So yes, this is my takeaway, that this, I leave this Slow Food Conference with hope, mm-hmm. filled with hope, and inspired to continue the work.
And I know yesterday you were just across the way doing a book signing. Can you tell us about your new book?
Yes, my new book is also dedicated to Fonio. It's a single ingredient book. It's coming out this fall by Lake Isle Press, my publisher. And the book is talking about the whole journey of Fonio. We traveled, me and a photographer named Adam Bartos, we traveled to the Fonio farming regions, actually an area called Seju, a tiny village in the south of Senegal. And we documented the harvesting of fonio and the processing, the traditional way of processing it. And then we go from that to talking about the nutrition of fonio, how this powerhouse grain that's been around for 5,000 years deserves to be talked about and deserves to have a book dedicated to it. And this is pretty much the vision of the book, introducing the fonio, this grain, to the rest of the world. And of course, there's a cookbook with recipes as well and beautiful photos of tradition recipes and imagined recipes. Because the thing about fonio is not only this is an amazing grain, but it's very versatile. It's very easy to prepare any dishes with fonio. It can turn into salad. I make sushis with fonio. You can make pastas. You can turn it into flour and bake bread with it. It's gluten-free, of course. It's very, very rich in two amino acids. They're called cysteine and methionine. And those ones, it's interesting because they're deficient in most of the grains. All the major grains have it in deficiency, and those are abundant in fonio. So that's one of the things I like to talk about. And again, that's a grain that can change the economic situation of those farmers in the region where fonio grows, because those regions are the poorest regions in the world. Imagine that's in the south of the Sahara, that's the Sahel region of Africa, and nothing grows in those regions, but fonio thrives there. So that's like a really important grain, and again, that's why I dedicated a book to it, because bringing awareness to it and opening new markets to fonio can truly, truly be transformational in the regions where it's from.
So I know you have a lot of recipes in your book. I'm curious, what is a traditional way that fonio is made? I know you're also creating your own new recipes, but how would we see it if we went
The interesting thing about fonio is, first of all, it's a grain that cooks. It cooks like rice, 1 cup of fonio for 2 cups of water. But the difference with fonio and rice, it cooks in 5 minutes.
Yeah, you know,
that's a grain that's really, it's really amazing. The timing is really mind-boggling. Traditionally, you often see fonio served with peanut sauce. That's the thing that you see in West Africa. That's a peanut sauce that's really very pungent. It's like cooked, and sometimes you have meat in it. Lamb is oftentimes the one that's used, but often it's also vegetable, root vegetables, carrots, yucca, cassava, and also leafy vegetables such as from cabbage to, it could be collard greens, sweet potato leaves, cassava leaves, because see, in that region, nothing is wasted. You know, it's very, very interesting to see that we're talking about it now in slow food, how nothing is wasted. But that's been our tradition in West Africa, in most of Africa, as a matter of fact. When nothing is wasted, they've always been eating leaves and the roots and the tuber and the vegetable itself, and they have different recipes of different ways of adapting it. So that's one way of cooking fonio. Another popular way of cooking fonio is with okra as well. You see, oftentimes fonio comes with okra, because it, you know, okra, for those of you who love it, I'm one of them, it's a wonderful combination with fonio.
Yeah. Through your efforts, I have found that I've had easy access to fonio, and I've cooked it a couple of times, and I think it's like a little bit fun in the sort of instant pot era, and everybody is obsessed with instant pot recipes, and yet there are these simple foods that you can just make with no effort on the stovetop, faster than you could heat up your instant pot and get it to pressure, and you have this like delicious versatile grain that's ready to go. And I think that we have a sort of a food culture that is really ready for this. It's funny because it's a very traditional food, but it is a convenience food also.
Totally, totally. I can't believe it's been around for 5,000 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, it probably says a lot about our forefathers, our mothers, and how they were just ahead of their time. I mean, we're just catching up right now.
Yeah, they're so much smarter than we are now, right?
Indeed.
<Yeah.
laughs>
Can you talk more broadly about your personal food philosophy and sort of what drives you to be a food ambassador?
Well, I take my inspiration from the tradition, really. It's you know, it's been really the source of my cuisine. Even though I've worked almost 3 decades in New York kitchens, so I cannot reject what I've learned from it. I've learned so much in terms of modern ways of cooking, but I always connect it to the tradition, and whenever I'm cooking, I tend to naturally look back into either memories or researches that I've done when I like when I travel. I like to travel around the African continent, and usually my first stop is the markets, you know, because the markets are really the place where I find that inspiration, where I can reconnect with things that are almost lost, you know, and I find very inspiring to bring back or to reintroduce, or you know, without being pretentious, but to like just be able to save something that was disappearing, because oftentimes in our regions we don't cherish or we don't value enough the things that we have, and our tradition, we tend to look down at it, and we want to be like the West. We're welcoming McDonald's and KFC and that kind of thing, unfortunately, and we have such beautiful, I mean, slow food at its best is really what West African cuisine is. And my philosophy is really, I didn't invent anything. I just tried to cook how my grandmothers cooked, you know, and respect the ingredients, respect the seasons, and as much as possible. And that's, the rest is easy, because once you respect the season and the ingredients, food is great.
You just said your grandmother's cooking. Do the men in your family cook also?
The man in my family never cooked. Never cooked. You know, I had one godfather who cooked. He was the only man I seen cooking growing up, and he happened to be of Vietnamese origin. You know, because in Senegal, we have a small community of Vietnamese due to the colonial past. The French had been in Senegal, and they'd been in what they called Indochina at the time, which became Vietnam. And when the French lost that Indochina war, at the time, the French colonial army was Senegalese soldiers. They called it the Senegalese Battalion, as a matter of fact. So those Senegalese soldiers returned to Senegal, and a community of Vietnamese came with them, and they moved to Senegal, and they've been there for a few decades now, and they also brought their cuisine as part of the food. And this man happened to be a friend of my parents, became my godfather, and I would spend summertime at his place and just amazed at seeing him cooking and just playing with flavors that were not very familiar to me. He was just an amazing cook, but he was an exception to me because he was Uncle Jean.
What made you decide to sort of go against the grain and pursue it yourself?
It just happened to me, yeah. Really, you know. And I was prepared because the background growing up in Senegal, you are always exposed to great cooking and great food and fresh food, you know, every day. It's like cooking is done every day. Market is done every day. You know, you go to the market, you get fresh fish, you get, you know, the fish has been caught today. You know, the vegetables are coming straight up from the farm today. You know, so I'm used to good food growing up in Senegal. So I was ready for that. And I arrived in New York. And in New York, two reasons, you know, not only my first job happened to be coincidentally, no plans, happened to be a restaurant job. And I was a busboy in that restaurant. And I was fascinated by the fact that in that restaurant, there was only men in the kitchen as mm-hmm. opposed to what I grew up seeing. You know? But in addition to that, too, with the limited budget that you have being a young African student in New York City, and so your limited budget just gives you just a certain access to a certain type of food, you know, which is, you know, when you come from a great food culture, it's execrable. It's like so you have to really try to look back into preparing the food by yourself, you know, for yourself. And many of my peers, many of the Senegalese friends of mine from my generation who came to New York, we learned to cook in a way because we just couldn't afford to have to deal with the food that was available to us. We just had to call back our mothers and get those recipes and cook for ourselves. And gradually, for me, it was that and the working in that restaurant from a busboy going into the kitchen all the time and becoming friend with the chef who took me under his wing and just gave me an opportunity to start from the bottom up, you know, washing dishes, peeling vegetables, peeling potatoes, from there to garde-manger to, I mean, all those stations to saucier to the grill, and 30 years later, I'm still doing that.
So. Well, now you have your own restaurant.
I have my own restaurant. Yeah, I have my own restaurant called Teranga. It's in New York City, on Fifth Avenue and 110th Street in Harlem. And
Teranga got a little windy and exciting
Windy. Teranga is a continuation of the same mission of introducing these food products from West Africa and these ingredients such as the grains fonio, and I'm also dealing with farmers from Liberia and bringing their red rice into the menu of Teranga. I also have fermented cassava couscous from Côte d'Ivoire. So the vision is to introduce those products from West Africa to the Harlem community.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And how has that been received so far?
It's been amazing. It's been really, really amazing. You know, it's like the fact that people can come in the restaurant, it's a, you know, I like to call it a fine casual because everything is cooked from scratch, but the client, the customer, our guests can come and prepare their own food. They have a board and they see the options, the grains, and then they see the sauces and then they see the sides, you know, and they pick their own stuff. So it's less intimidating than coming and just seeing like a simple menu that tells you exactly what it is, but it's from a foreign culture, especially from Africa. A lot of people tend to be afraid already when they hear that. So because, you know, the media hasn't been too kind to anything coming from Africa, and the history between Africa and America also hasn't been very very propitious to accepting the everything coming from there, especially the food. The food, you know, because we also tend to think of Africa as, you know, this continent of famine and like scarcity, and so it's you know, it's just I remember when I first wrote my first cookbook and I was interviewed by somebody who was asking me, you know, she was shocked by the abundance that she would see in the book and the vegetables and the new ingredients and just the lushness. And she was like, she couldn't believe it because she was prepared in her growing up and the media prepared her to always see Africa as this continent of scarcity, and yet it's a continent that like has great cuisine and great ingredients and nutritious and very balanced food that actually the world is catching up. The way we've been eating, the world is now catching up with that and saying, oh, this is the right way to eat. They've been doing it right. And also for not to forget how Africa's been influencing American cuisine itself. When you look at Southern cuisine, it's African cuisine. You know, those recipes, you travel back to West Africa, you see the exact recipes. The gumbo is right there. The jambalaya is right there. The sour chebujon, the Hoppin' Johns, it's the black eyed pea and rice that we have. So those ingredients arrived here from Africa. So, you know, there's so much ignorance. But yeah, when they get to see it and they, you know, they realize that it's not so unfamiliar.
Right. So there's so much education to do because, I mean, maybe people just are not realizing the African roots of what is so like deeply rooted American cuisine and soul food, what we would call soul food or Southern food, which is so, we think it's so American and it's all
and yet,
come
yeah.
straight from Africa.
Absolutely, absolutely. American culture has been deeply impacted by Africa mm-hmm. in many ways when it comes to food, when it comes to music, when mm-hmm. it comes to
all the important things.
All the important things.
Wait, when you go back to Senegal, what do you carry with you about American food? And what is surprising kind of as that like message comes back with you?
Can you come again?
So when you, if you go back to Senegal and you describe, let's say, the food scene in New York City or in Harlem, are people surprised by what is happening with like the food scene in New York City? Like, are there impressions of American food being all fast food? What is sort of that dialogue like?
Oh, well, it depends who your audience is. I mean, many people, unfortunately, are still just fascinated by a certain aspect of America, American culture, and they are looking, they are celebrating the first KFC that arrived in Dakar, I think, a couple months ago. It's like a celebration, unfortunately. I've been to Lagos, and I see KFC is like people line up for KFC. It's just, you know, it's sad. Mm-hmm. But, of course, there's also this conscious growing, especially growing middle-class population that just now really want to see our cuisine, our traditions coming back. And don't get me wrong, so the traditional cuisines are still very much appreciated and it's very much a big part of it. But, you know, that's like just the impact of media and television and stuff. You know, they mm-hmm. just want to be like Americans. The whole world wants to be like Americans.
Yeah. Do you have a food in mind that will be the next Fonio for you?
A food in mind that would be the next Fonio?
Yeah, your next food culinary ambassadorship.
Yolele, when I studied Yolele Foods, Fonio was just the first ingredient that I wanted to introduce to the American consumers because of many reasons. It was checking all the boxes. It's like it's gluten-free, it's nutritious, it's great for the environment, and it's delicious. It cooks in 5 minutes. But it's just a list of many other ingredients, and we're gradually going to grow. The next phase for Yolele is first we're turning the sfogno that you can find right now at Whole Foods in grains. There's going to be fonio mixes. We have three types of fonio mixes that are coming up this fall. We also have fonio chips, different fonio flavored chips, and the flavors are also using African ingredients like dawa dawa, for instance. It's a fermented cassava, fermented locust bean that's really pungent. It's vegan. It's delicious. It brings so much umami, and that's like a chip that that's about to go in the market. But the next ingredient after fonio, we're talking about Bambara beans. Bambara beans is also an ingredient that you don't see much, even in West Africa, it's disappearing. And we hope to work with the supply chain and work with farmers and support them and bring it and package it and bring it. Why Bambara beans? Because also for the same reason it's drought resistant. It's a grain that also can be cultivated in the same field as fonio in a rotation pattern so that it's great for the earth. It allowed the earth to the topsoil to be regenerated. And in addition to that, Bambara beans has the same quality of peanuts, but it doesn't have the allergen aspect, you know, so it's really amazing that it almost tastes like peanuts, but it without the allergen factor.
That's phenomenal. Can you make a spread?
You can make a spread.
Like a peanut butter?
Exactly the same, wow. Yes, absolutely.
Ooh, well, I'm excited for that to launch. I want to taste. I'm so curious. Our founder also founded Heritage Foods USA, which has a very similar philosophy, I think, of eating an ingredient to save it, which I think here at Slow Foods is so much like, let's go back to our roots, let's make sure we're advocating for these more sustainable crops. But that wasn't really a question. It was mostly just a statement that I think is really exciting that you're both supporting a community that could benefit from the American consumer's interest, but it's also something that is delicious and exciting. Yeah.
Is it too early to say at this point for Yolele Foods what the benefit to the farmers is? Or like, are the farmers seeing profits already from fonio?
I totally believe. I mean, the data is too early because it's been 2 years in the market, in the American market, but totally looking at the amount of containers that are coming gradually, the demand is growing. I mean, the market is opening. Right now we are in about 30 Whole Foods, but next year we're going to be nationally on all the Whole Foods.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Food services, I mean, every day pretty much there's a new account, and there are, you know, we're dealing with chains of also conscious restaurants, you know, like Tender Greens, True Kitchen. They're all embracing fonio and they're putting it in their menu. So it's really going directly right now with cooperatives in Mali, Diana, in South Senegal, Koba Club, in Togo now we're working with a cooperative. So all of them are seeing the results right now. Of course, I can tell definitely the results are positive, yes, and the impact is there.
Awesome. Well, we really appreciate all the work that you do, Pierre. We're coming up on the end of our time, but I just wanted to say thank you again. And do you have social media handles or a website for Yolele Foods to share?
Yes, absolutely. So Yolele Foods, it's at yolelefoods.com. At Yolele Foods. We have yolelefoods.com is a website. Also, not to forget my restaurants, it's teranga.com if you're in New York City. ITSTERANGA.com. Teranga means hospitality in Wolof, Senegal. That means everybody is welcome to come and share. Yolele, again, is a Fulani word. That's a Fulani word. The Fulanis are like the largest nomadic group in the world. So the idea with Yolele Foods was to be nomadic food, to transcend borders, to come from West African culture to introduce it to the American culture. So again, Yolele spells Yolele Foods, FOODS.com. So these are the handles.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, Pierre Chiam, for joining us on Heritage Radio Network on tour.
Thank you for inviting me.
That is going to be the conclusion of our program from Slow Food Nations. I want to say a huge thank you again to Slow Food, to Hearst Ranch, to Big Green Egg, and the Julia Child Foundation for Gastronomy and the Culinary Arts for making our programs possible. You can catch this and all of our other recordings from the festival at heritageradionetwork.org. Look for Heritage Radio Network on tour. You can also find us wherever you listen to podcasts.